again, everybody. It is time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 136. And I am Michael Citro from themainland.com, the founder and managing editor. We talk about all things Orlando City and Orlando Pride. I am going to bring in my broadcast partner now, David Rowe, up in Tallahassee. How are you?
You know, I'm actually doing pretty well for a guy who follows a team that's not playing well. Maybe I'm just starting to slip into some sort of altered state of reality in my brain where, you know, we're not as bad as we are. But, you know, we're Stockholm syndrome, something. I don't know. Anyway, I'm feeling okay today.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you are. I feel like crap. I'm tired of the losing. I'm tired of the looking for silver linings, and it's just really hard to talk about losses on losses on losses on losses. And that's what we've got this week. Two games since we last spoke, two losses since we last spoke, Dave, and in two extremely different ways. I guess we'll just jump right in. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of all of the happenings of these games. I just don't have it in me this week to really dissect the game and go in any kind of linear fashion. So I'm just going to hit the highlights. And
let's bullet point this thing.
Maybe they're lowlights, but let's start with Thursday against New York City FC at home. You know, the thing about the soccer Yankees is that they are really, really good at home, and they had been struggling on the road this year. You thought maybe this is an opportunity. The last time the Lions were home, they beat Toronto, looked very good in doing it, nearly got a clean sheet. But no, that didn't happen. New York City wins 2-0. Orlando City wins the crossbar challenge, hitting the woodwork four times and hitting the inside of the net zero times. So Orlando City has now gone, four games in a row against New York City FC without scoring a stinking goal? Are you kidding me, Dave?
Unfortunately, no, we're not kidding you. That is indeed the case. Hitting the post four times was... You know, it's something we've joked about earlier in the season that it seems to happen a lot, but that was utterly ridiculous. After twice, you're kind of like, and then the third one hits, and you're like, all right, so this is the worst. But no. They get another. And you're just left shaking your head and wondering how something like that happens, especially at home. I mean, one would think just by law of averages, something's going to go in if you're that close.
Yeah, it just reminds me of Happy Gilmore. Are you too good for your home?
It's just go to your home.
It's just so annoying. It's just it's such a nut punch of a shot to see it come off the post, because that means you were like literally inches from a goal. Every time that happens, inches from a goal, and it happens four times, so you're roughly 8 inches from four goals and an absolute laugher. And instead, you lose 2-0, and the pain continues. Although, I was told by several people on social media and in our own comment sections that once Jason Christ was gone, all of this was going to stop because the roster was just too good to lose games under anybody else.
I do remember reading something and hearing something about that myself.
The problem was Jason Christ. I was told this, and it has not happened. It is not a thing. So my question is, was that the wrong move then? I don't know. I mean, the team does seem in some respects to be playing better. Where I see issues, and it's funny because a lot of the people are saying, well, you know, he doesn't have his two center backs in there. I was like, the same stuff I was saying about Jason Christ, in other words, right? The same stuff I was saying about him not having his, you know, the guys that he needs in there being in there. He was just about to get them back. He gets fired. And now that's the excuse that the team that's playing so much better now can't get any wins. They did get one win, But I don't know that they couldn't have gotten that with Jason Christ, because we'll never have any way of knowing that. And I'm not here to really rail on that. I'm just making an observation because I'm frustrated. And this, you know, I'm not opposed to coaching changes if it really changes things. So far, it hasn't. It's, you know, you see a team that looks like it's more dangerous in the attack, but it's still not getting results. And that's really the bottom line. So,
I feel like Melvin from Office Space, I was told there would be cake.
Yeah. And then there's just been some really odd personnel decisions that I can't really argue with, but I can't really support either. And we can talk a little bit more about that. We talk about it in one of the talking points about the New York City game, is that PC played left back and he was awful. I can't even get mad about it, because if you don't play someone all year and he's getting no minutes, he's going to look awful in midseason against a team like New York City FC.
Yeah, if I remember right, I think he got a 2 in our player grades, which is, last I checked on a 10-point scale, not good.
He was getting destroyed. I mean, he was just getting absolutely hammered. I thought he played a little better out in L.A. I think a lot of people still were holding Thursday against him, and maybe they were holding some things against him that weren't his fault. He was asked to track the right wing. He did that, but then L.A. kept running in Dos Santos into that channel between him and the center back, and I think a lot of people blamed PC for that, and that wasn't his responsibility. That's got to be, you know, either Guida or you know, El Munir or somebody else has to make that run or watch that run and defend that, because PC can't defend two players. He's got to defend one, and he's already committed to defending the right wing. So, but I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. New York City game, again, Maxi Morales scores off just a weird play where it looked like everybody kind of touched the ball, but nobody could really get a good touch on the ball. And then was a PC that knocks the ball off the shin guard of a player, and it almost goes in. I think Earl got a touch on it, hit it off the post, and then it just bounces exactly right to Maxi Morales for an easy goal. And then they got one right before the half to make it 2-0 on a play where, again, PC just gets absolutely destroyed by Anton Tinnerholm, and he makes a great shot, and it's 2-0 loss. I guess
if it wasn't for bad luck, we'd have no luck at all, especially on the little ping pong balls that go on in the box on our defensive side. That inevitably we cannot seem to be able to get a good clearance, and more often than not, it feels like they end up getting into the back of the net either. And on, you know, like you said, easy ones for Morales or just dribbling over the line. It's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, and you know, the second goal too was also a shockingly bad giveaway by Yoshimar Yotun in his own half. I thought against New York, Yoshi had a terrible game. I didn't think he played very well at all. It was one of his worst games of this season for sure. But there wasn't a lot of positive play. But the second half, I thought everybody played better in some respects. The second half of the game was much better. I think that was where Orlando hit 3 of their 4 posts in the second half. And it just, you know, you can't get back in a game if you can't put the ball in the net. They couldn't put the ball in the net. And you know, you get swept by the Pigeons and don't even score a goal against them. And that is embarrassment, complete embarrassment in my book, because I don't like that team very much. I don't think I've made any secret of that. And really hate losing to them, and I really hate not even being able to score a goal. I can't point to any positives from the whole season series. So, I don't know. You got a man of the match for this game?
You know, Johnson did okay. You know, despite the goals, I thought Edwards did okay. RJ Allen, I guess. I mean, you know, he was trying.
Yeah, I thought RJ played a pretty good game, actually, overall. You know, most of the danger, obviously, was on the other side of the field. RJ had some key passes. You know, really probably should have had an assist at one point, I think on one of the ones that hit the post.
But, of course.
You know, I thought he did pretty well. I would not argue with RJ Allen for man of the match. Then Dave, the team had only they basically got up and flew to LA the next day because MLS scheduling, ladies and gentlemen, to play Los Angeles Galaxy. The LA Galaxy had also played on Thursday in LA. They had a road game in LA against LAFC on Thursday. So
they had to travel also.
Yeah, so both teams played on Thursday. One team had to go across the city, and the other team had to go across the country. And so I just figured LA is just going to just absolutely destroy Orlando in this game.
I went into that game fully expecting to get our rear ends handed to us.
I was thinking this is going to be another one of those 4-0 games or whatever. And no, surprisingly, it was not. You know, the team actually looked, especially in the first half, looked like a very fresh team. Like they had some jump in their legs. They had some excitement, some enthusiasm, some spirit. And they go out and they take a 1-0 lead on a play where virtually anybody on that on the forward line there could have scored the goal. Kolesnyan ends up holding it. And then Higuita runs in and gets his fourth goal of the year. Unbelievable. 4 goals this year for Higuita. And makes it 1-0. LA, of course, wasn't going to just sit back. They came after Orlando and got the equalizer on a sort of a play where nobody kind of tracked Dos Santos. And, of course, a guy who has had struggled to score all year scores a goal against Orlando City, makes it 1-1. and just before the half, you know, a beautiful counterattack. And finally, Orlando gets a break with an own goal, which we haven't seen in 2 years. We haven't seen one since 2016.
Wow.
From an Orlando City opponent. So the opponent puts one in their own net. And, I mean, obviously, the thing about it is if he doesn't put that in his net, I mean, Kolesnyan is putting that right on Yoshi's foot anyway. So it's probably going to be a goal either way. So it was just a really great build-up, a great attack, and it was 2-1. And you thought, well, maybe – you know,
this is new.
Maybe it's our night, because usually, you know, you give up – you score a goal on yourself – I don't know what the percentages of the you know of a team's winning percentages are in MLS when they score a goal for the other team, but I bet it's pretty low.
Yeah, it wouldn't seem like that would be something that lends itself to winning matches.
Yeah. So you know, they come out of the second half, they get an early chance, they just miss. I think it was Yoshi again who can't seem to find the net.
Nope.
And a minute later, it's 2-2 because Zlatan decided to be Zlatan, and there was just no stopping him. There's nothing that Orlando did worked. It was a sort of a nothing play out of the midfield where it looked like Amro Terek was in good position. They go up, he goes up for a header, loses the header to Zlatan, which, you know, that's not ideal, but it was a 2-on-2 situation with Ola Kamara, and Chris Schuler got absolutely roasted for pace by Kamara, and Tarek, after losing the header in the air, got outrun by the old man. Zlatan outran him into the box, and Kamara puts it on his head, and, you know, there was no missing that. That was a goal.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't mess with a Zlatan, so we've established that prior. You mentioned that last week, and he certainly proved that to be true, unfortunately. We've said it before. You know, how many different back lines has Orlando played this year?
A lot. We'll just leave it at a lot because I don't even want to count. although, you know, and I just messed up because I just gave an accounting of the third LA goal, and at that point it was 2-2, or at that point it was 3-2 Orlando. But the 2-2 goal was a cross from out wide that you know. Zlatan was at the back post, and he was being covered by PC and Mohamed El Munir, who are both, I think, roughly come up to his waist. Like, if they were seen at an amusement park, everybody just assumed those two were his kids.
Yeah, if they were to – if one was to stand on top of the other one with a trench coat over it, then they could look like one guy next to them, mm-hmm. next to Zlatan. But unfortunately, no, they weren't.
Yeah, so Zlatan scored it, made it 2-2. Dom Dwyer with just an amazing header in traffic off a great cross that we need more of from Mohamed El Munir. So El Munir assisted Dom and made it 3-2.
Then once again, you're sitting there, you know, where is this coming from? Like, this is not what Orlando has done this year. They haven't come back when they've gone, you know, when they've given up goals, let alone take the lead again.
Yeah, it's like, where are they getting the legs for this? And, you know, after playing on Thursday and traveling across the country and playing a lot of the same guys. But it was 3-2. Then the play I just described, the 2-on-2, made it 3-3. And then it wasn't long after that that a ball into the box, Tarek heads it, has a chance to at a free header to clear it, and he only gets it about 6 yards away to, I don't know, maybe a guy you want to cover, Zlatan, standing all by himself. And I'll put some of that on PC, but there was really nobody else in the area that, you know, and you got to have guys on this guy. You can't just, I mean, I remember a time in the first half when Zlatan gets the ball at the top of the box and three guys collapse on him immediately. And I think the announcers even called that out. Three guys. They, like, we're not letting this guy beat us. Someone else is going to have to beat us. Where did that go in the second half? Because there were never three guys near him.
I can only assume that they figured that that was one of those, oh, well, we don't all have to be here, and then everybody forgot and nobody did it.
Well, regardless, you know, once it got to 4-3, it almost immediately, you saw the legs go out from under Orlando. You saw that they didn't have the jump that they had. You saw that they had trouble connecting passes. They had trouble keeping the ball. They had trouble dribbling out of trouble or passing out of it. It was, they couldn't keep the ball. It was like, okay, all the adrenaline has just now left our bodies, and we're feeling every mile between Orlando and Los Angeles. And the Lions really kind of got lucky that they didn't concede two or three more goals, because Zlatan had some great chances. Chris Schuler, too long on the ball. Zlatan just came and took it from him. Yeah. Right in front of Earl Edwards Jr., who thankfully was a little more aware than Chris Schuler was on the play. It was a nightmare game for Chris Schuler. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. You know, we saw, of course, around the time it became 3-3, you started to see guys fading from the game. Chris Nagita kind of disappeared completely, and he was a big part of that first half for sure, the first half performance, which was much better. Kolesin started to disappear from the game and not be able to get on the ball. Credit LA for some of that, but I think a lot of that was legs going away in the short turnaround and the cross-country trip. But even for all that, Orlando City with a golden opportunity late to get an equalizer, free header in the box for Stefano Pino, and he missed the net. So Orlando gets nothing and likes it again. And 4-3 loss, which is, I guess, better than a 2-0 loss. But, you know, again, somebody was MLS Player of the Week who played against Orlando. This is happening just ridiculous amount of times.
Yeah, unfortunately, somebody gets a hat trick, and that somebody's Zlatan. It's, you know, that was easily predictable as to who was going to get that. You know, going back to Edwards, I thought he actually had, despite giving up four goals, it's going to sound weird, I thought he had a decent match. I mean, he did make some very good saves, including that one that you said, where Zlatan just, you know, was all by himself with only he and Edwards in the area, and he actually made a really, really good save to, you know, come out just a step or two and get that. Mm-hmm. He had some other ones throughout the match as well, and I think he did it. Once again, I know that he gave up four goals, but it's still, if you go back and watch, most of those he didn't have much of a chance at, and the ones that he did, he made a good play on. So I don't want to give it up to him. You're right. I think a lot of the players, you know, before the legs went out from under him, were playing very well. There were things that I liked that I saw. And, you know, part of that's, hey, you know, we scored three goals on the road at LA Galaxy after traveling all the way across the country on short, you know, turnaround. So I know it's a loss. I know it hurts. And especially, you know, when they came back that many times, but they did still score those goals. And that's, you know, we said at the beginning of the podcast, you know, I'm feeling a little bit better. You're feeling a little bit less better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm going to take that positive, from it, you know, that they did at least, you know, given all the circumstances, they did at least make a showing of it, and make Zlatan have to get a hat trick to, you know, secure the win.
All right, so you're going silver lining on this one. I'm going. I'm not enthused by this game. I'm not enthused by any game you give up four goals. You talked about Earl, and he did have some good saves, had some good moments. Absolutely could have stopped the first Zlatan goal by coming out and taking control of the ball in the air. It was a high cross. He had time to get out there, maybe punch it away. Stayed on his line, decided to play it safe, and it cost him. So yeah. I would say that he could have played that goal better. Not sure he could have done much on Dos Santos's goal, but I think we did see maybe a hole in Earl's game in that his lateral quickness may not quite be where it needs to be. There's a reason that he's been on the bench for 4 years and is just now getting his shot, and that's because the coaches see him in practice. They know his strengths. They know his weaknesses. So maybe that's one of his weaknesses, because that first LA goal, I think, is a goal that a lot of keepers, maybe not a lot of keepers, but a lot of top-notch keepers, like a Robles, would maybe get to. It wasn't really hit with a lot of power. It was well-placed, but I think that if he had a good look at it, he maybe should have got to that. So I'm going to say that there's a couple of goals maybe I would have liked to have seen him do better on. But overall, he did face a lot of shots and a lot of good opportunities, and he stopped most of them. But this is not a team that can have a bad performance from anybody, or even a mediocre performance from anybody, because that right there is the difference between winning and losing games right now. And I thought that in the first half, most of the players on the field played well. I thought as the game went on, PC started to go away. I think Sutter started to go away in his return, because he hadn't played in a while, and yeah. It's understandable that he was starting to drag, and I thought he was going to get taken off, but with having to chase the game at that point, James O'Connor opted for some offense, although he eventually did get Will Johnson back to right back, but I thought he would have come off earlier, because he did look like he was dragging earlier in the game to me. I was surprised even to see him start the second half after being out as long as he was. So it is what it is. I thought that a lot of those guys started the game brightly, including Higuita and Rocha and El Munir in the midfield. And I thought as the game went on, all three of those players faded a bit. And Kleshin as well. Although Kleshin was man of the match. He was the one pulling the strings. I know he frustrates some people when he doesn't shoot the ball, but he still made two goals. So the own goal was completely him. A lot of people said, well, you should have taken that shot. He's a right-footed shot at a bad angle against a pretty good goalkeeper. That's a low percentage opportunity. He's going to pass that 99 times out of 100, and it ended up in a goal. So the right outcome happened from doing the right thing. And then holding the ball, it turned out to be a good move, because he saw Higuita making that run. He held it up. Higuita made the run. He slipped it in. It was an easier goal. So I think Kleshin for me was man of the match. How about you?
I agree. Kleshin was man of the match. Although, like you said, I thought El Munir played well. Yotun had a bit of a bounce back from New York. I thought he played better. Dom did Dom. Got his head on the ball. But Sasha's, like you said, pulling the strings, making. Absolutely, being the field general, especially during the first half, is what kept Orlando in that game. So, he gets my man in the match as well.
I thought the only really two poor performances were the two center backs. I thought they had a number of times when they had opportunities to clear the ball, and it didn't leave the penalty area, or it just barely left the penalty area, or it went sideways instead of out from the goal. And those are, MLS center backs need to do better in those situations. So I didn't think Tarek or Schuler had very good games, and I would bet that they would say the same.
And if that's not the story of Orlando City this year, then nothing is.
Yeah. All right, so there's something that's disturbed me the last two games. I'm wondering if we have another Justin Mirum situation on our hands.
We talked about it last week, and
we have not seen. We still don't see Mirum in the 18. He's not even training with the team anymore. Uri Russell did not dress the last two matches. I don't know what's going on there, Dave. Is this a case of another guy who, is on the way out?
That's a weird one. I don't know. And if it is a case of he's on his way out, is that because, we've talked where, Higuita could be a person of interest for other teams. Perhaps O'Connor likes him too much to give him up during the transfer window and is sacrificing Yuri instead. Or is it just because we've had so many matches in such a short period of time? But, then again, why would he not even be dressed out? So I don't know. That's the Miram thing is becoming a bigger thing than we were hoping last week when we spoke. But, the Rosell, I don't think that – I don't think that the defense has got enough good players, especially when you're starting PC, to not have Yuri there, even though, obviously they play a different position, but it's still odd.
Yeah, when he didn't play on Thursday, I mean, his name was one I would have put in pen. I would have put that in ink for Sunday's lineup.
Right.
And for starting, and he didn't even dress. So he wasn't on the injury report. Don't really know what happened there. If something has been reported, I haven't actually seen it, which I don't always see everything, but I do try to keep up with the latest news. I haven't been able to get out to training, but they haven't. I don't think they've trained yet this week anyway. So they may have trained this morning. I don't actually know when they got back, but it was just strange to me. And yeah, it could be a situation where Higuita is maybe being showcased a little bit to trade him or to drive up some interest. It may be a case of where somebody's expressed interest in Yuri, and they don't want to risk him getting hurt. Now, it's funny because Portland knew they were going to ship Fernando Addy out, but they still played him the game before he was announced as leaving, and he scored a goal. So that's the way I prefer it. I prefer if you're on my team, you're going to play until you're not on my team anymore. And so this whole situation with Miram is very odd to me. And now we've got maybe a similar situation brewing with Rosell. We're not really sure. If I do get out to training, I certainly am going to ask James O'Connor about that. See if maybe there's a knock that we're not privy to. But he was definitely not on the injury report. So.
And of course, we've only got, a week left in the transfer window. So.
A week left. I'm glad. I do want to talk about that because so far this transfer window has consisted of Shane O'Neill and only Shane O'Neill. Team has not addressed some issues, like, for example, an apparent impasse with a very pricey left winger. O'Neill, honestly, Dave, I feel like if O'Neill doesn't get a red card with less than 10 minutes to play against New York, maybe Orlando City wins that game in LA, because if Shane O'Neill played in LA the way he had been playing in the previous few games, that back line would have been a lot more sturdy.
Absolutely. He's been, like you said, if other than going out, I mean, and we even said it during I think the takeaways mentioned that, he was playing fantastic right up until he was shown a red. So, and has been, he's been a bright spot that they brought in. And I agree. If he's there, maybe it is different.
Yeah. The thing with Shane is that, it's an unfortunate thing. His red card was because it was of a late challenge. He caught Morales with a late challenge, and he was late because the dude hadn't played since 2017, and this was his third game in a couple weeks. So, he's not going to have the quickness and the jump in the legs. And it's unfortunate that so many guys were hurt that he had to play that much, because it would have been nicer to have been able to maybe rest him, one of those couple games, and then, keep him fresher for this one. But, it's just, if he could have just saw out the last 8 minutes of that match, maybe the LA game goes a little bit differently. But you're right. He was maybe Orlando's man of the match prior to getting sent off, and maybe that's how RJ wins that one by default. But it is what it is. I don't know. I haven't heard any rumors. I haven't seen much. Is anything going to happen in this transfer window? If it doesn't, I don't think much of Orlando City's chances to get this thing turned around, because other than Dom, you know, there's not a lot of offensive firepower out there. Pino seems to have been a guy who hasn't been able to elevate his game to the MLS level, at least not yet.
Right.
You know, you've got a young designated player that's struggling to get on the field, and when he does get on the field, he's not doing a whole lot. I know I still see a lot of people saying Coleman needs more time at the number 10. He has not shown me that he can play the number 10 position. And all of the highlight reels that I've seen on him, he's doing all his good stuff from the wings. So yeah. From what I've seen, he's not a number 10. The only person that's actually called him a number 10 is not on the technical staff. And it's Alex Leitao. They gave him the number 10, so presumably he can play that position maybe, but he's obviously not beating out Sasha Kljestan in that, you know, in training for that. And nope. I'm not seeing a whole lot of sharpness from him on the field. Now, granted, he's playing sporadically, so that's going to add to that, but he's a teenager, and that's what teenagers do. That's what teenagers look like when they step in to a higher level and they're, you know, playing, you know, in a foreign country and having to adjust and all these other things. It's not unheard of. I mean, Barco has been a little bit better for Atlanta, but they're basically having the same issues with him there. As not quite translating into what they thought they bought, but I'm willing to be patient and give the kid time, but he's not adding to the offense right now. Obviously Justin Merrim's not adding to the offense right now, 'cause he's not even training with the team. So where's the offense going to come from? Chris Mueller has kind of hit the rookie wall a little bit and didn't get to play in LA, which I actually would have liked him to have been the first sub, but
yeah,
he wasn't. Because I thought, you know, if LA's defense had been kind of a mess and he's got that motor and he's going to just be relentless and he's got fresh jump in his legs because he's not played yet in the game. You know, maybe you bring him on at the hour mark and give him 30 minutes and just say, run your legs off, man. Go get us a goal. I mean, I would have liked to have seen that. But, I mean, even Mueller had 3 goals in, what, a 4-game span? Yeah. And hasn't produced anything since then. So the offense is not there. And I know people are like, well, we need center backs. We have center backs. They just need to freaking heal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what are you going to have, 9 center backs on the roster? You can't do that.
No.
So –
yeah, if Orlando doesn't go out and get some offensive firepower of some sort, I will be highly upset with this transfer window, because that would be a clear lack of awareness of what needs to be going on, let alone, you know, just not addressing a need like that when it's so apparent to us and we don't get paid to do this. Yeah. If they don't do that, that's huge.
And they have to really decide. I mean, if they're not going to use Merrim, they need to get what they can for him and not just try to hold on for the best deal or try to get what they paid for him back. Because if you're admitting this didn't work and you've made a mistake, you have to move on from that mistake. You have to say, okay, we've already decided he's not playing for us anymore. Get what you can. Someone's going to give you something for him, because he is a player that – people want and have wanted around the league, and there's a need for him on other teams, especially teams that are on the bubble and are looking for one player to push him over the top. There's a market for him. It may not be what you paid for him, but get what you can so that you can free up the cap space, do whatever you need to do to make the other move to bring in someone who will help you, because it's just dead weight. And we see it all the time in this league, that players that you thought would work out don't work out for whatever reason. I mean, Seattle just parted ways with an international player that they brought in, had high hopes for, and he didn't pan out. And I think someone else earlier in the year also did the same thing with another international. It doesn't always work out. Uri Rossell may arguably not be working out here. Move on. Turn the page.
Because we're paying a lot of money for a guy that's not dressing out right now.
That's right. And if you look at Rossell and Merrim's salaries together and they're not making the 18, you got an issue. And that's, I'm confident in saying that all Orlando City fans, or most Orlando City fans, were fairly excited given the roster we started the season with. And
I know I was. We spoke about it early. I mean, go back and listen. We were very happy with how the offseason went as far as, you know, the acquisitions.
But if you swung and missed, at least you swung. And it's time to swing again because, you know, a week left in the transfer window and, you know, the margin below the line is growing instead of shrinking. And running out of time. And if you went all in on this season like they pretty much did, you're about to go bust. You can't hit on 20.
No.
So anyway, we'll see what happens. By the time we talk next week, we'll know if any moves were made in this transfer window other than Shane O'Neill. And I think early returns, small sample size, but it looks like Shane O'Neill was a good pickup.
I'm liking it so far.
All right, Dave. So the Pride were off, but they had a Tournament of Nations that is underway. And this tournament is indeed of nations. There are nations in this tournament. And one of those is the United States, hosting the event for the second year in a row. Japan, Australia, Brazil are the other teams. Pride players galore. Pride players on every team except Japan.
Yep.
So the U.S. opened with Japan, and they got a big victory, 4-2. Didn't play particularly well defensively, but the Pride's Alex Morgan, she can score goals, and she scored three of them in that opening game.
Yeah, a hat trick for Morgan. It seemed like every time you looked up, if you had the game on the background, every time you looked up, it was Alex scoring another goal, which was really nice to see. It's funny that U.S. women's national team is number one in the world, and yet it still feels like maybe they're not as good as they were previously. And I think that that's probably true. How much of that has to do with Ellis or who she's bringing up or when she's bringing them in or any of that stuff, I don't know. But they fortunately found a way to win that one once again. A big credit goes to Alex, and she's what, 16 or however many in her last almost the same amount of matches for the women's team.
Yeah, great 2018 for Alex, and she's up to 89 career international goals. So she's hunting that 100 goal mark, which has been done, I think, by, I want to say, six players in U.S. history. There's been a lot of goal scorers in U.S. history. Getting the win over Japan was good. Then the team played against Australia, and Australia won this event last year basically because the Aussies beat the U.S. 1-0. They came into this game, and they were very difficult to break down. Scored the first goal on a wicked counterattack where you saw a rare mistake by Becky Sauerbrunn, another mistake by Abby Dahlkemper, allowing Chloe Legarzo to get in behind and score an easy first goal. But the U.S. just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. Never, it was a weird game because you'd never, I've not seen Megan Rapinoe look that bad at times. And she had a very odd game because she probably had the most moments in the game where you went, oh, that was terrible. And also the most moments of the game where you said, wow, that was some move. And it was crazy because she'd do something great and then something bad would happen. Her set piece delivery was off. You know, her dead ball delivery was not as good as it normally is. But the team kept coming. They kept firing. They kept getting chances. And just at the death of normal time, finally, Rapinoe gets a good cross into the box on a corner kick, and Lindsay Horan puts it in, makes it 1-1. And so we've still got us quite a bit of soccering left to go in this Tournament of Nations with one match left to play. The U.S. will be playing Brazil. Australia will be playing Japan. And it's going to come down to who can win and maybe win the goal differential battle, because everything's all even right now. The U.S. Is ahead on a goals scored differential because they have scored one more goal than Australia has by scoring 4 against Japan. Australia scored 3 against Brazil. Brazil got themselves in the conversation with a win over Japan that was led by Marta scoring the first goal in a tight 0-0 game. She scored late in the second half, and then they tacked one on in stoppage time. Or tacked one on late, and then Japan scored the stoppage time to avoid the shutout. But it was 2-1 to Brazil. So Brazil's on 3 points. The U.S. and Australia on 4 points apiece. Japan is out as far as being eliminated. And it really comes down to Brazil and the U.S. That's going to be a huge game because both of those teams are still in it. And Australia is going to try to put a whooping on Japan to get as big a goal differential as they can, because if they can win that game. And Japan's not – they're not a great team, but they sometimes are a difficult team. So it's kind of hard to score lots of goals on them unless the game's very open, kind of like the U.S.
Like
played
the U.S.,
them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's Australia's not going to make the same defensive mistakes that the U.S. did probably. I mean, you can't count on it. So the U.S. has to go after Brazil, and Brazil came pretty close to winning that game last year in this event because they scored some early goals and forced the U.S. to play from behind.
Yeah, and of course – it's going to be an exciting night of soccer because, like you said, there's three teams that are in it. You add in that there's Pride players all over the place, and especially we're going to have a little Pride on Pride with the U.S. versus Brazil. In the previous game, Marta, of course, scored a goal and also, I believe, had the assist on the other goal. So doing what she does. And it'll be interesting to see how the U.S., you know, is able to deal with her. And then on the flip side, you know, if Rapinoe can get back to her usual form, and it's funny, you know, when you said that she did some bad things and she did some good things, and you know, I guess we're usually only used to seeing her doing mostly good things. Mm-hmm. So that even though she did good things, we noticed the bad things more. And it was like, I was watching that match going, gosh, Pino's not having a very good match. And it wasn't until I went back and looked and went, oh, yeah, okay, she did some good stuff. But it didn't feel like how she usually is. Mm-hmm. And it might have been, like you said, it may have been because of, you know, set piece delivery that usually she's better on. And that's, you know, that's usually where she's providing really good balls in for Alex and anybody else that's on, you know, playing up top. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there were other moments, but she missed a good scoring chance really badly, like missed the net by like 15 yards.
Yeah.
She had this other move where she made an unbelievable cutback move to free herself up for a shot. And I think she shot that one right at Lydia Williams, but it was just a really one of those wow movements because she had two defenders on her and made just like a simple cutback. And it was the sharpness of the cut just completely threw both Australian players off and they couldn't recover. And she freed herself up for the shot. She had a lot of those moments. And then, you know, she'd make a great move to get by one player and then stumble or just like seemingly over nothing. Like just lose her footing a few times. She had some trouble in traffic a few times like that. But yeah, it was overall in the end, the U.S. did enough to fight back. Australia, a very confident team. They know how to play the U.S. They're not afraid of the U.S. and they played like it. And you know, just a good thing that the defense for the most part was all over Sam Kerr, which is good because when you play Australia, you got to be all over Sam Kerr.
Boy, yeah.
Because she can hurt you. And sometimes that can lead to other players being open. I know that there was a good opportunity for Haley Rosso, I think, had one. And, you know, there were a couple other players that had some good opportunities as a result of paying a lot of attention to Sam Kerr. But luckily, in the end, a 1-1 draw. The Tournament of Nations still all up for grabs later this week. And then the players get to go back to their NWSL teams. And Tom Cermani has already said he expects his Pride stars to come back from that tournament and be available for Sunday against Sky Blue at Orlando City Stadium. So that's going to be interesting. I would imagine that, you know, most of those internationals may start on the bench Maybe a couple of them will start if they, you know, if they feel fresh enough. I know some of the Brazilians haven't seen as many minutes. Camilla hasn't seen as many. Poliana hasn't seen as many. So and then maybe somebody like Monica could play. And of course, Ashlyn Harris hasn't seen any minutes, so she'll be back. And you know, I think maybe Morgan starts on the bench and she's fresh for the second half of that game. So that's some good news. And, you know, Sky Blue is a winless team, but winless teams can be dangerous teams because they got nothing left to lose and they're desperate for a win. So the Pride need that game. It's a must win game because every point is so precious in this very, very tight NWSL race. So we'll be back to next week. We'll talk about the Tournament of Nations, how it shook out, and we'll also talk about the Pride against Sky Blue. Dave, but we've got a game Saturday before that Sunday game with the Pride. We've got a Saturday game. Orlando City will host the New England Revolution, and it's weird because it's an Eastern Conference team, and here it is August. It's going to be August. We're recording this on the last day of July. We have not yet seen the New England Revolution this year, so we need to know a little bit about that team, and we've got just the right person to talk to. We're going to bring in our special guest right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, happy to have with us from the Bent Musket, very tired Jake Catney. Jake, how you doing, man?
Hold on, wait. Is it the Mainland Podcast or is it the Mainland Podcast?
Yeah, I mean, you can pronounce it however you want. You know, with your New England style of speaking, we won't understand it anyway.
How dare you, Sid? How's it going?
It's going. Well, I don't know if you've been keeping up with the standings, but it's not going real well down here.
I you know what? I still think over the last 3 months. I still have a feeling you guys have been catching us. I can't prove that, but I still have a feeling you've been getting closer.
I think I can unequivocally prove that we have not. 3 points out of our last potential 39 points. That's not good for anybody. But I want to talk about things that have not yet come to pass rather than the horrific things that have already come to pass. So why don't we start out with the Revolution, of course, Orlando City and the Revs getting together this weekend. And, you know, New England is not, I think, or at least, you know, granted, recent fortunes haven't been as good as we're used to here. But I think New England has surprised quite a few people around the country this year with being in contention early, being above the line much of the first half, and you know, especially in the wake of what happened with Lee Wynn. So can you just kind of give us a synopsis of the Revs' season to date? Because we haven't seen you guys all year.
You know, one of these years we're actually going to figure out if New England is actually good at soccer. I am almost positive. I have said this probably to you guys before. I do not think the New England Revolution are bad at soccer. The question I have is, I don't know just how good they could be. Currently, I think it's 6 in the standings now. Dropping a little bit, 3-game losing streak. Only it's 2 wins in their last like 10. But of those 2 wins, like, there was a 7-game unbeaten streak. It was 2 wins and 5 draws, but it was still a 7-game unbeaten streak, which isn't really bad, but, you know, mixed in there was, you know, dropping a 2-goal lead in Vancouver, you know, not getting a few points at home because you're playing some teams, you know, Seattle and LA that, you know, aren't supposed to be as good. You really needed to win those games. Losing at Minnesota, you know, these are games where, you know, New England, who has a very, very difficult schedule coming up now, most of their games the rest of the way are going to be on the road. And, you know, New England hasn't exactly proven to be a great road team over the last few years. They've been better this year. They were dismal last year. But still, just, you know, I think 1 win on the road still, in 9 games is not a great record. And the defense has still been inconsistent. So a lot of the same problems still exist for New England. Brad Friedel's style has certainly changed the way they might play, but it's still a lot of, very the same inconsistencies from not only game to game, but just inconsistencies, particularly in defense, rotating out players, injuries, things like that. So it's hard to say exactly where New England stands right now. If they are a playoff team or not, I think is irrelevant. What I don't think they are is I don't think they're a contender past the top maybe three teams. New England, Montreal, Chicago, Philadelphia, Orlando, those teams are all fighting for the last couple spots for the wild card berths. But most of the time, I'm going to think those teams are going to be one and done. You're going to play a road game against someone who's significantly better than you, and you're just not going to go on the road and win that game in November. And I think that's really where New England and their fans want to be. They want to think that they're a playoff team. They want to think they're a contender. And I don't think being a 5 or 6 seed and a one and done team qualifies as that.
Well, you guys are lucky in one respect. At least for the moment, you are above the line, and you're heading into Orlando City, where we are well below the line. So you've got that going for you. Other than obviously trying to get a 3 points this weekend, does New England need to do the rest of the season to stay above the red line?
The biggest problem New England has right now is somehow a season-ending injury to Chris Tierney, who tore his ACL a couple months ago, has been a tremendous problem. Chris Tierney was not going to be the starting left back going into this year. It was supposed to be Gabriel Somi. Somi started off okay and turned south. He has not adjusted well to the league. He's a Syrian international, also a dual national of Sweden. That's where he was playing when we acquired him. And that injury has forced usual center back Claude Dielna to play left back more often, and it's just been a problem. New England's defense has always been a work in progress the last couple of years. A lot of new guys, a lot of, expensive guys. Claude Dielna is a designated player. Jalila Anibaba has been getting a lot of minutes, which he's thoroughly deserved at center back. And so it's been a difficult process when you think, like, how can your season unravel with the injury to, guy who was supposed to be a backup? But it's been an issue, and that's something where New England really hasn't adjusted or recovered from that. I think if I go back to even that winless, or not that winless streak, the 7-game unbeaten streak, that was around when Tierney got injured. Sometime, I think it was in May. So the last couple months, New England just hasn't been winning games. They've been scoring goals, they've been getting draws, but they haven't been closing out games. And part of that, I think, is just the defense is just not really equipped to defend for long stretches. This is a team that wants to get out on the counter. It wants to break out, but when you have to sit back and pack it in, they're just not equipped to do that right now. And I don't know if that's the style or if that's the personnel. But if New England is going to be a team that will stay above the red line, which right now I'm not sure that's a guarantee, they have to figure out how to do that. And they've got to figure out how to do that very quickly. And they're going to have to learn how to do that on the road. And that's, I think, going to be, a challenge. And we'll have to see, how that plays out the rest of the way. I think they've got 13 games left, and I think 9 of them are on the road. So that's going to be, a very, very tough task. They're going to stay above the red line. Philadelphia is a lot closer, and, Toronto's still, back there, not all that far behind. And I know they've been a mess, but certainly they have the ability to certainly catch New England if New England isn't going to be able to close out many games on the road.
You talked a little bit about the style of play. What has Brad Friedel brought to the Revolution's game this year?
Well, under Jay Heaps, I always sort of thought New England should counter more. What New England used to do was basically get the ball into your final third and ping it around all the time and just not do a whole lot with it. And now New England has sort of done the opposite. They sort of hang out with the ball more in the midfield, but they break out far more aggressively and get into the final third on the run. This means you have guys like Diego Fagundes, Christian Pena, attacking players on the ball in 2v2, 3v3 type situations and generating chances basically on counters. Not always through turnovers, but just far more quicker to develop plays. And it's sometimes almost too quickly where New England and their defense win the ball back, and then 15 seconds later, they're already playing defense again. And that's sort of the issue of the Revolution being unbalanced. The defense is having issues because they're not equipped to handle defensively for long stretches, and the offense does not help them by keeping the damn ball sometimes. And it's a twofold problem because the offense really works sometimes, and it's really, really fun. The downside is that when it's not working, there hasn't been a plan B. You know, Diego Fagundes is really great on the counter as the attacking midfielder, the cam roll, the playmaker. He struggled a little bit creating things on his own from the run of play, from the build-up, meaning New England is in the attacking half of the field. They are in possession. Now what do you do? You know, Christian Pena has been great on the left-hand side. He's been able to take people on. He's an absolute speed demon, and we love him, but there always seems to be – there needs to be something else, you know, that New England has done. I was looking somewhere earlier. I don't think the New England strikers, that tandem, Teal Bunbury, Christian Nemeth, it's been several weeks since those guys have scored as a unit. And that's another problem where, you know, you really need, you know, Teal Bunbury was on a tear a couple months ago, double-digit goals in the Golden Boot race, and that pace has slowed down. And when that pace is slowing down, New England has started to not win games. So they need to get the strikers back and involved on the offense, and that means that, you know, they're cleaning up, you know, chances, or they're finding space on the counter to finish off goals, and those just haven't been developing. Whether that's teams have started to figure out New England, or Brad Friel hasn't been able to make adjustments, I don't know. Because again, I don't think New England is necessarily bad. I just don't know how much better they are than fifth or sixth in the standings. So it's been a mixed bag, particularly recently. But if, you know, New England had closed out a couple of extra games, you wouldn't be right above the red line. You'd probably be closer to Columbus than you would be closer to Orlando.
Now, looking ahead to the match, you mentioned that New England's had some defensive problems. Orlando City was able to score three goals in their last match against the Galaxy, even though it ended up being a loss. You know, that's still some decent offense from them. Looking at the Orlando City offense versus New England defense, where do you find the matchups are, you know, a good one way or the other?
I mean, if Sasha Kljestan is just going to, you know, dominate the midfield, if the New England holding mids, you know, Scott Caldwell, Wilfred Zahibo, Luis Caicedo, whoever's in the holding midfield, if you're letting Sasha Kljestan control the midfield, you're doing something wrong. And I think that for an LA Galaxy team who's playing three at the back, you're just inviting someone like Sasha Kljestan to just tear you up. I don't know if he specifically did against the LA Galaxy. I think he had at least one assist. But I think from a matchup standpoint, you've got to figure out a way how to shut down Kljestan, and in particular, not let Kljestan get the ball to Dwyer. If Dwyer's going to, you know, get crosses and head the ball in, things like that, I think that's fine. I think I'm okay if that's how Orlando's going to get goals. You obviously want to stay away from some of the set piece situations. New England struggles with that a little bit, but ideally, I think New England with a similar formation 4-2-3-1 in the mirror matchup will be a little bit better to handle Kleshchen in the middle. And LA, I think LA should be doing better at that. You've got Perry Kitchen and one of the Dos Santos brothers in the center of midfield. So I think between the two of them, you should be able to dominate the middle of the field. And somehow LA is just weird. So I don't know. That game didn't make any sense. A lot of MLS games don't make a lot of sense this year because MLS. But yeah, I don't necessarily think LA is a benchmark for what Orlando and New England are going to do because there's no Zlatan as well.
Thank God.
And that's just not fair, really. Zlatan does not come to New England. He does not play on turf, as most high-priced designated players just don't do in MLS. I know Ibrahimovic is a TAM player technically, but really we all know that he's really should be a DP and it's just rigged. So, I don't know. These games have always, bugged me. Orlando City to me has always sort of been a little bit of a, what I call the mirror match. Normally I complain that when we play Columbus, it's basically just a dogfight. A lot of fouls, a lot of change of possessions, not a lot of great soccer. I think this game might be far more open than games have been in the past, but it's not necessarily going to be any different. It's just going to be really a matter of if New England starts breaking out early, do they score? Are they attempting to protect a lead for the rest of the game, or will New England, be trying to, fight back? And that's not something New England's really been doing great on the road. They've been able to score early, and they just have not been able to hold on to leads. So if New England is getting out early, they need to keep the pressure up on the offensive side, meaning, hey, we scored a goal. Let's not sit back and play defense. Let's try and get a second goal. And if it leads to Orlando scoring and tying the game, that's fine. We're still playing the way that we normally have played and how we've been successful. And on the road, that's what New England has really been struggling to do for not just under Brad Friedel, but just for years. They don't close out games very well. They blow a ton of leads, leads that honestly they should not be losing. I think they're two goals up in Vancouver this year. It was three goals up in Seattle last year. These are just points you just can't drop. You've gone all the way out on the West Coast. You've gone all the way down to Orlando. You have these leads. You need to make sure that you hold on to them, and you need to get 3 points and cement your place above the red line, which right now I'm not sure New England is going to do that.
All right, Jake, before we let you get out of here, a couple quick questions for you. The first of these is Justin Miram for Juan Agudelo. Do you like that? Do you not like that? Can we make this deal right here on the podcast?
I would not say no to Justin Miram. I wouldn't necessarily do it for Juan Agudelo. I'm not sure. The other problem, I don't think you guys want Christian Namath, which is really, I think, the player who New England would want to move. I don't know how many minutes Namath has played this year, but it hasn't been a lot. And he's making about $1 million, which is not helpful for New England. If you're a team only has $6 million on the payroll, something like that, and Namath is 15% of that, and he's got one goal in however many minutes, that's not helpful. So I'd rather keep Agudelo. I know you guys want him. I would not say no to Justin Miram. I don't know why Miram keeps getting traded, because he's really, really good, and I enjoy him. I would certainly take him in New England, but I would rather give him up for Namath. And if I have to send you guys some Garber bucks to make that deal happen to cover the salary switch or something, I would not be against that. But I also don't know, I don't know how often, if Miram's going to be a full-time starter. New England's been sort of rotating out who plays the other wing. It's usually been Fagundes in the middle, Pania on the left, and a rotating group of Agudelo, Rowe, Namath, Caicedo, whoever else is on the right-hand wing. And maybe Miram is that person. I don't know. If it happens, I would not be upset. But I'd rather keep Juan Agudelo.
All right. Well, we don't want Namath because, We've already got strikers that can't score behind Dom Dwyer. We need other guys that can score. But it's good. At least we had this discussion. We're negotiating.
Yes. Well, and you know what? I think what happens is if Miram's on the trading block, and for all intents and purposes, I guess he is. And I guess, has he been starting full time in Orlando?
He has not been in the 18 for the last three games.
Okay, but before that, he was playing a lot mostly, right?
Yeah, he was playing a lot and before the coaching change, and I believe he's played one game since the coaching change.
So you sacked Kreese.
Yeah, Kreese was fired, and then Miram played against LAFC, should have scored or should have had a game tying assist. It was we got pro'd on. Overturned by VAR, which was not clear or obvious of an error, so we're kind of still bent about that a little bit, but you know, they go on to lose the game by three goals instead of being tied with 20 minutes to play, and then we don't see Miram. Miram's ghosted, and now he's training with Eddie Johnson on his own somewhere, so it's been a very strange situation.
Well, the trade window closed in technically a week.
Yeah, it's not far off here. So, you know, well, if you and I are going to make this deal, we got to get it done. So we'll talk more offline about it.
Yeah, we might have to. I might have to follow up with who was it that sent me those questions? Logan. I might have to send Logan that and go, all right, you guys, Mir wants to be traded. Citro wants Juan Aguidello. I don't want to give him up. Who else do you want from the Rebs?
There you go. All right. Final question before we let you go, Jake. What do you see? It's a two-part question. What do you see as the key matchup of this game, and what's your scoreline prediction?
All right. My first question is, do you guys trust whoever your right back is?
Way more so than whoever our left back is.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you don't like your left back, keep an eye again, Christian Pena. If Christian Pena is on the left hand side and he gets annoyed, the Revolution will put him on the right hand side, and then whoever is your left back will have to deal with him. Christian Pena has been one of the most underrated and best offseason moves in the entire league. The problem is that because he plays in New England, I don't think anyone is aware that this has happened, that he is, you know, a borderline, you know, TAM player. He's making a few hundred thousand dollars, and he's really, really good. And we love him in New England, and somehow he's not going to the All-Star game, and Wilfred Zahibo is.
All right.
We still haven't quite figured that part out, but I digress. So if you're not really thrilled with your fullback situation, if he starts moving around, just be very, very wary on the counters. He will get behind. He will cause a lot of problems. If your fullbacks are pushing up high, New England's going to take advantage of that. Likewise, New England's fullbacks like to push up high, and we like to give the ball away in bad spots. I think it's – is it Yoshi Yotun?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If Yoshi is breaking out on his wing – that means that New England has done something bad. So that's sort of the matchup that you're going to want to watch, is sort of the wingers versus the fullbacks. If the fullbacks are up high, there's going to be a lot of counters. The game's going to be very open. If everyone's sitting back and being not soccering, it's going to be one of those weird, God, how are we playing soccer type games? So we'll have to sort of see. I hope that everyone's not afraid and they are pushing up and the game is open and kind of fun, even if it's not enjoyable for anyone, because it's just the same problems that I think we're both having, is that, God, we're just such a mess defensively.
And your score prediction?
As always, there's only one score prediction. This is the eternal 2-2 draw derby that I don't think has been a 2-2 draw for a couple of years, but still, that doesn't matter. 2-2 draw. I'm not upset by the score line this time, but New England needs wins, not draws. I know it's a road point. Road points are great, but New England's got a ton of road games left. Road points are not going to get it done. We need road wins. And I'm not sure today sets up well, or this weekend sets up well for a win. And I know it's Orlando. I'm like, I don't trust you guys either. I definitely don't trust us unless we drop four goals on you guys. Which is possible, but I'm looking at it going like, no, not after last week. It was a bad game. New England played, against the Red Bulls. I don't have a ton of, confidence they're going to break the losing streak. They might get a point, but I don't see a win.
All right, Jake, where can people find you on these here newfangled interwebs that the kids are so fond of these days?
Well, occasionally I do post things at the Bent Musket. It's not often. So you can find me at thebentmusket.com. At jcatanese43 on Twitter when I'm awake, which is not very often. I work midnight shifts and a ton of overtime, so you know, I'm actually probably gonna go have a snack and go back to bed because I have to work in 4 hours. But yeah, you always on the Any Revs hashtag, usually disgruntledly so, but it's fun. We wouldn't change anything for the world.
All right, Jake. Jake Catanese from the Bent Musket. Thank you so much for your return appearance here on the Mainland Podcast, and we'll talk to you again in the future.
Always, guys.
All right. Big thanks to Jake Catanese for taking time out of his the few minutes he gets to sleep and being with us to talk about the New England Revolution, because it's hard to believe we have not played against that team yet this year. But it's good, always good information from Jake. Big thanks to him for coming on. Dave, let's get to our mailbag. We've got some emails. You can ask us anything in one of two ways. You can hit us up on the email by writing to themainland@gmail.com. The other way you can do that is you can hit us up on Twitter. Our Twitter account is @TheMainland. Hit us up with the hashtag AskTMLPC. So hashtag AskTMLPC. You can ask us literally anything.
Anything.
Like our friend Lee, good friend of the program. Lee has emailed us again this week. He wants to know, Dave, if you could have, could keep only one, if you're in charge of the Pride roster, you can keep only one of the international players, meaning the Brazilians and Australians in this case, for the remainder of the season. And beyond, who would it be? We're excluding Marta because that would probably be too easy, he says.
Yeah, that definitely would be the easy choice. I'm going to say Pollyanna.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I could, just because I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of depth that we haven't hit there yet, and she's young, she's hungry, and I like having her on that end of the field. So yeah, for me, it's Pollyanna.
All right, I have a very easy answer to this question. Camilla is definitely my choice here. I remember how good she was last year, and I think she has not reached her full potential. And although she's had trouble this year getting going, coming back from the knee injury, I believe that by season's end she'll be hitting on all cylinders, and I think there's just a lot of upside there to Camilla. So,
so Brazilians from both of us.
Yes, yes, and that's nothing against any of the others. I think that I certainly don't think that that Alana Kennedy has played her best soccer this year for the Pride. I think that she played very well at center back for the Australians in this tournament so far, and I also think that Emily Van Egmond has really shown her full potential as a midfielder for her country that has not translated yet to the Pride, but I think she still has, you know, I think that, I don't know if it's tactical or what it is, but I think she certainly is a player that could give more. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I'm a little disappointed. I thought we'd get more from Pollyanna than what we've seen. And I'm not convinced that Monica is physical enough to play NWSL center back. So I think Camilla was an easy second choice behind Marta for me. So thank you, Lee, for the question. Appreciate that. Another question via the email channels. You know, the stuff that your mom and dad used to do, kids, is email. Now that you do all the texting and the social media. Luke, this is a first-time emailer, I think. What would you think about Orlando City signing someone like Graham Zusi? I think it could be a big upgrade, as we're a little light on capable fullbacks, wings, as shown by PC's horrendous performance by New York City FC. Also, Zusi is very flexible, and he can play many positions. What are your thoughts on Graham Zusi, Dave?
You know, at this point, I'll take any help back there we can get. So I would rather it be somebody maybe a little bit younger than a Graham Zusi, but like I say, that's when your house is on fire and somebody brings a bucket of water, you go ahead and take it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Sporting Kansas City's not wanting to part with Graham Zusi at this time. But if they were to come a call in and say, hey, you know, you're not really using that Merrim guy, I'd say, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
I mean, he certainly would be a player that would do a good job. And like you mentioned, a number of different ways that he could be used. So I'm not convinced he's a top-notch fullback, but, you know, we
don't exactly have any of those right now ourselves. So.
And he'll tend to play on the right. So I think if you looked at Orlando City's fullbacks and said who's the best one, I think you probably most people say Scott Sutter, and yep. You don't want to sit Scott Sutter. So probably not a great fit at this time for Zusi, but I would take him on the right wing in the fortunate mark. So, yeah, thanks for the email, Luke. Let's see who else we've got. We have a friend of the podcast, Ryan Smith, has emailed us. This is a question right up your alley, Dave.
Uh-huh.
All right, so he says, in the stadium, Heineken reigns supreme, but for those televised away games, what's in your glass? Favorite away game viewing experience you've ever had? So there's two questions here. What's in your glass, and what's the favorite away game viewing experience you've ever had?
All right, so what's in my glass is unfortunately something that most of the listeners are not going to be able to get as of now, and that's a local Tallahassee brew from Proof Brewing, their IPA called La La Land, which is an outstanding beverage. I can't even get it in can. I've got to go get it in growler, but that would be if I get a choice, that's going to be it. Favorite away game viewing experience. Now, are we talking just soccer or anything?
I think he's talking about Orlando City.
About Orlando City. Okay. For me, it's going to have to be one that I hosted here at the house when I had a bunch of people over, some who were Orlando City fans, some who were not soccer fans at all, but you know, I convinced to come anyway. And it's a year or two ago now, so I can't remember what match it was because I was busy being a host. But I enjoyed it because I got to share something I'm passionate about with friends of mine. So that would be it for me.
Yeah. Oh, first, I have to take issue with Ryan. Even though they're a sponsor, I don't think that Heineken reigns supreme in the stadium.
No, yeah.
I think there are better beers to drink in the stadium, but including, I think, Crooked Can's in there.
They are in there.
And I would put basically anything that Crooked Can makes ahead of Heineken. No offense, Heineken. I know if you want to sponsor us, Heineken, I will say whatever you want to say.
I'll even drink one of your beers.
As for what's in my glass for away games, well, here's the problem. Typically, I'm working on away games, and I'm writing, and I'm not usually having a cold one usually, but that usually comes after the game, so I'm not usually drinking something. But I have a tendency to just continuously try different craft beers, and I don't tend to drink a lot of the same thing. And if I like something, you know, I'll have it again at some point. But I'm rarely do I drink two beers in a row that are the same beer, unless someone else has bought it and it's at a party or something. So like this past week, for example, we stopped into the Deviant Wolf brewery in Sanford, which had a really nice, you know, it was a quick stop, so only had one beer. It was very good. I don't even remember what the name of it was, but it was quite tasty. You know, that's what I generally do is I'll like, even when I go to the store, I'll do a build your own six pack and get six different things. So it's kind of hard to say what's in my glass because it's never the same thing. My favorite away game viewing experience I've ever had. Well, again, I'm usually in my den with the laptop open and typing. So my away game viewing experiences are normally all the same. But I will say there was I'm going to have to say this is perfectly topical because the 2015 MLS All-Star game, Several of us got together, and mainland writers got together and watched the, went down to Johnny's filling station, here in Orlando, and we got together and we watched the All-Star game together. So it was kind of like watching Orlando City because, Kaká was the MVP of the game. So that was probably my favorite away game viewing experience for the Lions because, again, I'm usually at home in my den with my laptop open covering the game. And so it would be a multi-way tie.
Because they're all the same.
Yeah, and they usually don't win them. So
that's what I meant.
All right, so thanks, Ryan, for the question. We have one more question here.
Ken had one for us, yeah?
Yeah. Can you – oh, there he is. There he is. I found it. Ken says, what is the club planning to do with the two empty plots of land near the stadium? Nothing has happened to them since stadium construction was complete. Dave, you got any thoughts?
None. I live in Tallahassee. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either, and I'm not even sure if the plots in question are owned by the club or not, so I'm not sure. I think we've had this question before, it seems like, a while back. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. So maybe they're planning nothing because it might not even be theirs. I'm not sure what exact ownership they have and what the perimeter of their land is. But I do know it's not what it originally was supposed to be because that church wouldn't sell. So the church that's right there, that was originally supposed to be where the stadium's sitting. So it's a little bit different than what it was planned. And I don't have an answer for your question, Ken, but I will say that if the club owns that land, here's what they should do. Because I can't tell you what they're going to do. So I'm going to give you an answer because we promise you an answer. And I don't know. It sounds like a wishy-washy answer, even though it's true. So I'm going to say here's what they should do. And that is that they should take that land and make it free parking for the media with a free shuttle service. That's what they should do.
And you have no self-interest in that whatsoever.
No. I would also accept building a permanent structure for mainland tailgates.
That's we could be on board with that. Let's get on that front office.
Thanks for the question, Ken. Thanks to everybody who wrote in with questions this week. If we didn't get to yours, it's because I didn't see them. I apologize. So keep bugging me. Email's the best. It's weird. The email's the best way because I always see those. They're in my email. I can organize them easily. When I get them on Twitter, I like them, and so they're in my likes. But sometimes my likes can get a little bit jumbled because, people say nice things or I like, something someone else said and that kind of thing. So they can get lost on Twitter a little bit. But I hope that's all we have.
But if that's all I saw, and I tend to look on the Twitters on the days when we do this. So if you guys can keep tweeting the hashtag STMLPC at us, and I'll do my best to make sure we grab them.
Yep, hashtag AskTMLPC on the Twitter. We are at TheMainland, or email us at themainland@gmail.com. All right, Dave, before we get out of here, key matchups and predictions for Orlando City against the New England Revolution.
All right, so Orlando comes home, fortunately, because that road stuff is not good. My key matchup is going to be, and it's so hard because you don't know who O'Connor's going to play, but I'm going to say the midfield as far as whether, what Yoshi and Sasha Kljestan are able to do. If they're able to control that midfield and get some stuff into Dom, I think we score some goals. And I think that's, coming off a three-goal scoring bonanza, even though it was lost, if they can keep that going, that's going to be very important, especially because New England's back line is not necessarily the best in MLS. So I think there's opportunity there. And if we can, last I checked, if you outscore the opponent, then you have a good chance of winning. So I'm going to say that's the key matchup. And my prediction, which I haven't done since all the way back against Philadelphia, and that was wrong then too, but I'm going to say a 2-1 win.
All right. I am going to go to I'm going to kind of borrow from Jake's page a little bit here. I definitely think Pania specifically against Orlando City's back line is the key matchup for me. He's been the danger man. Of course, Bunbury's also been a bit of a danger man. But Pena is, I think, a player that I think scares me a little bit more than Bunbury. Not that Bunbury's not capable and has scored goals against Orlando before in our history. But I think Pena against the back line would probably be the matchup for me that I would want to watch the most and to worry about the most. I'm going to steal Jake's and we go 2-2 draw because, again, that's the most common scoreline between these two teams. And I just don't have any confidence that this team can win games. I mean, I know I said that before, prove you can win and I'll start picking you to win. And then they beat Toronto, but I can't. It's still an aberration. One game out of the last 13. So even picking a draw, I think, is being optimistic.
Yeah, I'm not saying that mine was from any sense of rational thought or anything like that. We pick wrong all the time. I might as well try and be positive and pick wrong.
Yeah, it's just a gut feeling. So anyway, that's what we're going with, and it's in the books. You can take it to Vegas if you want, but don't blame it on us when you lose your money.
That's right.
All right, so that will just about put a bow on episode number 136 of the Mainland Podcast. Again, big thanks to Jake Catanese from thebentmusket.com for being with us on this week's show. Please read our stuff at themainland.com. And, of course, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Follow Dave on Twitter at MainlandDave. Follow me on Twitter at MainlandMichael. And, of course, follow at themainland. As well on Twitter. So you got to follow a bunch of us. That'd be great.
Yeah.
That'll do it. We'll be back next week to talk about a lot of things. We didn't really even touch on the All-Star game, of course. Yoshi Otun playing in the All-Star game on Wednesday night. We assume he'll play, but maybe he won't. Maybe this is a tactic by Tata to just make him travel a little bit extra, getting from LA to Atlanta and then have to do another midweek travel. And, of course, Cam Lindley playing tonight as we record this in the homegrown game. So we'll talk a little bit about that next week. We'll talk about, of course, Orlando City against the Revs. We'll talk about the Tournament of Nations, how that wrapped up, and the Pride against Sky Blue. And, of course, we'll preview all of the next upcoming games. So lots and lots to talk about. Some wins would be nice. That's all I'm saying. I'm not, demanding anything. I'm just saying it would be nice.
Please, we need it.
That's right. So we'll do it again next week. Thanks, everybody. And on behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro, founder, managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, go City, go Pride, go U.S. Women's National Team.